So last week, Kyle kicked us off on our new series of talks here on Sundays, Why This Matters. This is a fun one, guys. Kyle was really great last week. We're excited for as he previewed for this week. He was referring to the way that despite much of the behavior of many of Jesus's followers throughout history, Jesus taught that pronouncing judgments of this person is in and this person is out is something humans should avoid. And that job is like above our pay grade, he indicated. We looked at, over the summer at the parable of the weeds, one of my favorite parables from Jesus. And Kyle, I'll reference again. There's a really great talk from this summer called that looks at that. And so we encourage you to look at it. It's from like September 7, I think is the date, if you look back in our archives. At this church, we take really seriously this teaching from Jesus. That we are not in the business of pronouncing people in and out here. That's not what we did. But because to most of us, religion and spirituality and church have always seemed consumed by the question of in versus out, and like we cannot imagine religious people or spiritual people caring about anything but in versus out. This what this leads us to ask is if the focus of this church isn't in versus out. Are the stakes pretty low here? Like, that's what I think some people want to wonder. Are the stakes low then? Or like, okay, great, you're not about in versus out. So, awesome. Does that mean everything's really just the same? Does that mean that it's perfectly a nice thing to want to follow Jesus, the thing that we gather together to try to pursue every week? Perfectly nice, wonderful. But in the grand scheme of things, doesn't really matter that much. It's an interesting question. Is that what we're saying? Actually, I don't think we are saying that. So our experience following Jesus in this church is that setting aside the in versus out question doesn't make faith matter less. It makes faith matter more in a much more understandable way. I have some thoughts up here on the screen here. A few things that these are the topics that we're talking about over the course of this series: connection, justice, growth, and healing. These are things that matter more when we get the question of in versus out of the way and when we try to pursue faith. To us, pursuing faith and pursuing a faith community like this are matters that demand our attention and our investment. They are, in fact, high stakes, but not because it's the difference between being in and out, because to us, it is the difference between finding or not finding the kind of lives that everyone seems to want. Lives that are deep and full and resilient, that are pursuing things that matter most in our world. And so we're going to touch on a number of ways that we find this to be true throughout this series, like I have up here on the screen. Today, I want to pick up where Kyle left us off last week. He talked about having faith and having a faith community being the difference between you experiencing life as an echo chamber, where everyone around you believes and thinks the exact same way as you, or you experiencing the richness of diversity, you experiencing the interaction with people truly different from you, who may even disagree with you. That's what a faith community like this can offer us, what we call a non-siloed existence. Kyle was dreaming aloud for us as we last week, and it was pretty powerful. He said, my favorite thing that he said last week, he said, you know, every one of us is wrong about something. That's what he said. Every one of us in this room is wrong about something. How will any of us ever be challenged in our personal biases, in our incomplete perspectives, in our broken thinkings, if we are not regularly interacting with other people who might be different from us? Without a non-siloed existence, we won't ever be challenged. We'll just go on believing the same things, holding the same thoughts and opinions and perspectives that we always hold. If we want to grow, mature, become lifelong learners, one thing we might consider is the findings of social scientists. So by and large, we're told, new information rarely changes minds. It is being in relationship with people who are different than us that changes minds. So Robert Putnam is a Harvard sociologist, and he wrote a really long book called American Grace that nerds like me read. And it's an analysis of the largest ever study of religious behavior in America over many decades. And he takes to task answering, how have certain strongly held beliefs by certain religious groups, how have they changed over time? How have those strongly held beliefs changed over time? Has it been new information, he wondered, and he does some research to study that. Has it been conviction because of activism, say? And he does some research. His answer is, to a small degree, yes to those things. It has been those things. But the best answer, he says, to how does this happen, he somewhat jokes. He says it's Aunt Susan. This is the reason. What changes people's beliefs over time is prolonged relationship with people different from them. Aunts, cousins, neighbors. This is stereotypes, the things that need to change in us if we're to grow, if we're to become more loving, more like Jesus people. Strict in-out judgments, they are just hard to maintain for long when they apply to people we hold dear, right? They just break down. So a non-siloed existence is essential if any of us hope to learn new things, if any of us hope to ever be transformed in our life. But more than that, if, as Jesus taught, all humans are made in the image of God, this isn't just a matter of being nice. As one of our church's stakeholders recently put in one of the new videos that's on the front page of our website, if you haven't checked out our website recently, we have some very cool videos on the front that have been made by people who are in this church, who call this place home. And one of the ideas that came out of this is really great. She says, this isn't just a matter of mere tolerance in this church. What I want to suggest is this is a matter of us experiencing God. A non-siloed existence matters to us actually experiencing God. If we don't learn from others different from us, if we don't allow others to challenge us, to expand our views, we actually limit our access to and connection with God. Expanding our respect and our appreciation for the diversity of human experience is essential to knowing God more, because God has placed bits of himself in all people, in all cultures. We are all made in the image of God. Therefore, we need other. We can't experience God just on our own. You will have a very low ceiling. You have to experience God in the company of others in order to truly expand your knowledge of God. That's a really beautiful thing. So, does this mean that we are trying to be neutral here? I think this is a really important question to ask. Is neutrality how we hope to accomplish the type of community that we're talking about? Are we just saying, like, let's get beyond divisive and partisan stuff and just change the world already? Now, that sounds really nice in a lot of ways, I think. Let's get beyond the divisive stuff and just change the world. I think, to a degree, I'm like, oh, that sounds attractive. But it's been noted a great deal, mostly by scholars and thinkers from oppressed minority perspectives, that neutrality is a pretty removed and privileged position to take. It's a pretty removed and privileged approach to talking about problems. It's essentially trading partisanship for we stand for nothing. And in the worst form, this is mostly like a convenient PR stunt to hide behind. So, like, for example, a company, neither liberals nor conservatives have enough ammo to support when they're mad at you. It's just like, oh, we're neutral. To put the question more bluntly, I want to quote activist and Archbishop of South Africa, Desmond Tutu. He says, if you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Pretty strong words. So when I describe the community that we're trying to be, holding people together who differ, having truly a place where we can disagree and that can lead to challenge and growth for people, are we falling victim to this? It's an interesting question. Perhaps so, and if that's the case, then God help us. but at least as a statement of what we want to be here, here's what I'll say. When we talk about the kind of community that we are trying to be, holding together people who differ, we do not stand for nothing. We stand for something very specific that we think is at the core of the way of Jesus. We stand for the respectful conversation. I want to tell you what I mean. Standing for the respectful conversation is not a PR stunt. It is about vulnerability, humility, listening before speaking. The respectful conversation, as I'll explain in a minute, is not neutral. Yet, at the same time, it is operating on a different plane than partisanship as usual. And that is where I perk up and notice. So I'll show you what I mean here. I've put in your program for today the text from a document that we use in our small groups here. It's called Guidelines for Respectful Conversations. I'm going to read it for us here. You have the headings, and I'll tell you what the whole thing says. So first, there's confidentiality. It says, we want to create an atmosphere for open, honest exchange. What is said in these spaces stays in these spaces. What is learned in this space can leave this space. Seek to learn from each other. We will listen to each other and not talk at each other. We acknowledge differences among us in backgrounds, skills, interests, and values. It is these very differences that will increase our awareness and understanding of life and of God. Speak from personal experiences. We will use I statements to share thoughts and feelings. You cannot always speak for others. When we do, even though it may be unintentional, we often demean or devalue others around us for their experiences or their lack of experiences or their difference in interpretation of those experiences. Take responsibility for your impact. Our good intentions do not negate the negative impact that we may have on someone. We will hold ourselves accountable by challenging ourselves to be quick to sincerely apologize and then open to learning what we do not understand. Assume best intentions. Trust that people are doing the best that they can. Challenge ideas, not people. If we wish to challenge something that has been said, we will challenge the idea or the practice referred to, not the individuals sharing this idea or practice. Next, speak your discomfort. If something is bothering you, please share this with the group. Often our emotional reactions offer the most valuable learning opportunities. Next, one of my favorites, monitor your airtime. Be mindful of taking up much more space than others. On the same note, empower yourself to speak up if others are dominating the conversation. Be fully present. Everyone has significant contributions to make, and we need everyone to fully participate with both their heads and their hearts. And finally, redefine the term safe space. Conflict and discomfort are often a part of growth. Try to differentiate between feelings of discomfort and experiences of being unsafe. So when we bring these up in small group settings, we'll read these together, and then we'll ask everyone in the group, how does this hit you? And we always have incredible conversations about this. But for the purposes of today, I'll just get to my point. All of this to us is the reason that we are so moved by the life of Jesus and the story of the New Testament of the Bible. Jesus and St. Paul, the writer of much of the New Testament, they are two individuals who do not at all present as neutral. Jesus consistently demonstrates that he is on the side of the outcasts of society, the poor of society, and not those in power. In Paul's letters to the earliest communities that were trying to follow Jesus, we see him regularly encouraging the leaders of these communities to make safe space for those who didn't have safe space in that ancient Roman world. And just on a side note, most striking of this is the way that he does this for women. It's interesting. Many today in the 21st century will read Paul's words from today's perspective and find Paul to be uncomfortably patriarchal. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. But historians and scholars suggest that when we read Paul in his appropriate context, like when we try and read him from the first century where he lived, for his day, Paul was kind of a feminist. Like, he was creating spaces of status and impact and safety for women that didn't exist in the ancient Roman world, weren't even imagined before he was showed up into the world. So these two guys, they're not neutral. And yet we also see incredible, incredible movements toward unity and connection. Jesus holds together in his closest group of friends radical Jewish zealots, they were called, and tax collectors for the Roman Empire. This is basically the today equivalent of liberals and conservatives held together in a small group of friends. He holds together in his group of closest friends Jewish fishermen and Roman citizens with status. This is essentially a modern-day equivalent of working class and educated elites held together in the same close group of friends. And then Paul, in one of his letters, writes some of the most beautiful words ever written. He wrote, "There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." Now that kind of language, that is striving for a non-siloed existence in like the biggest, that's dreaming about it in the using the most grandiose language you can. But it's not neutral, is it? In this church, in our city and in our context, this day and age, the respectful conversation guidelines that I just read for us, they feel like as helpful a concept as we have found to follow in the footsteps of Jesus and Paul. I personally have gotten to be impacted by this so many times through this church. I've talked with many of you about my experience of a group I was a part of through this church in which we discussed racial reconciliation. We made space for people in the group that were coming from all different ethnic backgrounds, racial backgrounds, stories, places in the country. We were from all over. And we made space for each person to share their story of racial and ethnic identity. This group changed me through respectful conversation. At the first meeting of the group, Anna Cruz, one of our amazing leaders here, she is leads up our prayer team here at BOV. She lays out clear guidelines for all of us how to have respectful conversations about race. That group, I think, was actually the most important group of all as we learned those things, as we talked about those things. Now, where I was coming from was this. I had grown up in a very diverse circle of friendships and relationships. So I was pretty proud and sure about my racial awareness. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty racially aware. As Kyle will explain more next week, a little bit of a teaser there for next week. You should show up next week. Growing up specifically in the city of Evanston, the suburb immediately north of Chicago here, I had inherited an Evanston identity. Wonder if you're familiar with the Evanston identity. It is this. It's, we are racially progressive. Other places may have bigger issues with racism, but not Evanstonians. We, hashtag woke, guys, okay? We don't have those problems. But then I heard the racial identity stories of these other people in the group. And I learned that not everybody's experience was the same as my experience. They were, in fact, pretty different. And then I learned from the readings that we did together as a group that this whole Evanston, we are progressive identity was actually a classic example of a flawed approach to racial reconciliation. Sociologists even have a name for it. That's like when you know you've there's a name for this. Oh, yeah, so I'm not so brilliant and awesome. It's called colorblindness. This is the name they've given it. I was not nearly as woke as I thought. Now, this is important. Just because I didn't need a 180-degree change in thinking doesn't mean I didn't need a change in thinking. you know what I mean? That's right. That's right. I now think so differently about racial reconciliation as a result of the respectful conversations that we had in this group. And I hear about these sorts of being changed in relationship with people different from me. I hear about these things all the time in our church, experiences like this, particularly through our community's small groups. Some of my favorites have to do with the diversity in religious experience in our church. So people with Catholic backgrounds, Protestant backgrounds, non-religious backgrounds, backgrounds in Eastern religions, and more, all together helping each other expand their perspectives, expand their connection with Jesus as a result of being in connection with each other. We have things to learn from each other that we cannot teach ourselves. Guidelines for respectful conversations. That's what does it. So I want to be clear about why this feels so important to us and why I think this is really high stakes, guys. Jesus is often presented as a competitive figure, the captain of the Christian team in the great religious soccer tournament of life, right? But our read is just the opposite. Jesus is playing a different game, the stakes of which are far more important than a game of in versus out or win versus lose. This is a game that's focused on life transformation, a game that is about expanding our lives and our worldviews through learning from other people, through truly listening to other people, not just where you hear them talking and you're kind of sorting out what you're about to say in response before they finish, right? Really listening to people. This is a game about the expanding our connection with God, not staying in the same place our entire life, believing that that is going to nourish us spiritually forever, but truly growing and expanding every single day in our connection with and understanding of the God of the universe. That does not happen living in a siloed experience where everyone is just like me. I can only learn about God beyond a certain ceiling that's pretty low if I am in connection with people different from me, because they have things to teach me. God has put pieces of himself in other people that I cannot access unless I get to know them. This is not a neutral approach to life in the world. It favors those willing to learn over those certain that they know. That's why this isn't neutral. It favors those willing to learn over those certain that they know already. And we can tell you from our own experience leading this community that some people feel threatened by that lack of community, lack of neutrality. But to most people we meet, we're told that this feels really refreshing. That this feels like, I'm experiencing this anywhere else in life. Because while it's not neutral, it is not operating on those same divisive, partisan categories that so much of modern American life exists in. This is equal opportunity in the way it calls all of us to account, right? So here's the question I want to end with today. It's how can I experience for myself and help others experience the benefits of a non-siloed existence, what we're talking about here. Number one is master the respectful conversation with us. Commit to these guidelines that are printed in your program. Later this week, we'll post the whole document on Facebook so you can see like everything that I read today. Put them on your fridge. Breathe, eat, live these. This is the way that we can follow Jesus in the modern 21st century American city. Number two, use today's community fair to find a safe space to practice this, to practice respectful conversation. So last week and this week, we're excited because we have a community fair after service. You may have noticed there's like tables laid out as you walk into the Davis today. Just like at the end of last week's service, we're going to have people stationed there that are representing all of the community things that are happening through Brown Line over the next 3 months. And we want you to get connected with those things so that you can actually feel connected with other people this fall. Coming to Sunday service is a great thing. We love getting together here and talks and times of prayer and singing together. But the best way that people connect here is through our small groups. And so we just really want to encourage you to check out something. I'll explain at the end of the service how to participate in the community fair. But we want you to use these, use what you get connected with as a way to practice respectful conversations so you can take it into the rest of your life, into your family life, into your work life, into your neighborhood. We all are always constantly around people who are different from us. This is the way for us to, together as a church, improve at doing the respectful conversation. We will love and feel so much more connected with our life if we can improve in this, and we will feel more connected with God if we can improve in this. Finally, number three, if you are ever in a situation where respect is not returned, I want you to remember Jesus' words. I'll have it on the screens here. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, "Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." What I mean is this. Exit situations where respect is not returned for your own health. You are not a bad person if you do this. You are not shirking responsibility, because if you don't try to help this person expand their perspective, who will? Choosing a willingness to learn is on them, not you. I love the way that Jesus really uses very visceral language. Engaging in respectful conversations is sacred stuff. Consider yourself throwing the most precious pearls out there when you're doing this. This is the stuff of how people connect with God. This is a sacred engagement that you can get into when you start to have respectful conversations. Sacred stuff. The most precious stuff you own. Do not let the energy that requires be wasted on someone who's just letting that fall to the ground and trampling over it, like when we receive a lack of respect in return. Does that make sense? This is sacred stuff. This is the stuff of following Jesus. And sometimes we will not always be met with good intention or goodwill. And when that is the situation, what I want us here to leave with is we need to exit those situations for our own health. If we try to stay and be the hero, they will trample our pearls under their feet and turn and tear us to pieces. Does that make sense? I want to pray for us. So if you would stand with me, and I'm going to pray for us. And you can close your eyes or open your eyes, whatever helps you to feel comfortable. I'm just going to pray that Jesus brings his spirit into this room, that we can feel him close to us, each of us. Jesus, this is the, I have found this is the highest stakes stuff of life. This is the difference between experiencing depth and fullness in my everyday and just feeling so exhausted by life day in, day out. This is a big part of it. It's this whole, I interact with people different from me constantly. Whether that is in person or online, oh Lord, is it online? Is that going to squeeze the life out of me? Or am I going to find ways to realize that you have placed yourself in all people, in all cultures? And every relationship in my life can be an avenue to God if we can find our way into that sacred stuff of the respectful conversation. What a gift. What a gift that every relationship in my life offers. And so I pray right now for each of us in this room, if we feel far from that being our reality, no, I do not feel at all that every relationship in my life offers me a gift to connect with you, would you change this for us? Would in this moment we would feel internally something shift? We can shift toward the curiosity that brings this. And then, God, I do pray for any of us who have recently had an experience where respect was not returned. Or maybe we tried something. We tried our best efforts. Maybe it really felt like we were following those guidelines that we read. I just want to say, on if that's something that you're experiencing, I want to almost like speak on behalf of Jesus for you. Like, what Jesus wants you to know in this space, that you don't have to like belittle that hurt. It hurts when you try something like that and it fails. This is sacred stuff that you tried to do, and then it was thrown in your face, or you felt it was trampled on. So it is okay to feel the weight of that. And likewise, if you have carried with you guilt that you need to be more about this, more about it with so-and-so or fill-in-the-blank person who just leaves me so angry sometimes, and we've just felt guilt because we want to run away from that, I pray that you would speak your truth to us right now this morning. Help us to find a more balanced understanding. Choosing a willingness to learn is on each of us. It's not on me to do that for somebody else. And so we can rest. And this doesn't mean that we say, talk to the hand. I'm glad none of you are saying talk to the hand. That would be really 90s. But this means that we can find a better avenue. This means that we can let things rest in us that are maybe putting us on overdrive and we don't need to be. So I pray that you would speak to us in those places, Jesus, and you would speak to all of us as a collective. How can we be a place that stands for the respectful conversation?